This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Bob Gibson, is the political reporter at the Charlottesville Daily Progress. He joins us live in studio on Monday afternoons. Thank you, Bob, for being here.
Thank you. It is great to join you on a almost spring afternoon.
We're almost there.
You know, you feel it. All the jonquils, all the daffodils are coming up. It looks like spring. It almost feels like spring. It's going to be spring pretty soon.
Yeah, I was, I was working from home today because I just feel horrible. I think I'm getting that cold that's been going around. And my little boy was like, I want to go outside. And I'm you got to put on a jacket. It's going to be cold. And because I didn't know. I was sitting at the computer at the dining room table, and I opened the door, and it was like, wow, you don't need a jacket.
Nice weekend. Nice victory for the Cavaliers over the Turtles last night.
Oh, no, were you there?
No, I was watching on TV. It was a beautiful game. Sean Singletary's last home game at JPJ.
Oh, that's right. JPJ. That was last night.
It was beautiful. Sean played a beautiful game. He made the Turtles look like turtles, you know, slow animals.
Bob Gibson writes for the Charlottesville Daily Progress, and you can read his work in the paper and online as well at dailyprogress.com, and that is where you will find his blog. Just look for his picture in the little box there on the home page. And you broke some news today on your blog.
Paul Harris, who has been a friend for a while, a former delegate from Albemarle County. 7 years ago, he left to go take a job in the Justice Department in Washington. He decided not to run statewide next year. This is something he'd been mulling for a while. He had been looking at running statewide in 09, and that field is starting to flesh out because Friday in Richmond at the General Assembly, I ran into Jay O'Brien. Jay O'Brien's a former senator from Fairfax County who is running for lieutenant governor as a Republican statewide. He's running against Corey Stewart, who is the chairman of the Prince William County Board of Supervisors. The two of them are looking to get the Republican nomination for lieutenant governor. Anyway, a lot of people are looking at these statewide races next year, and Paul Harris said, not going to do it.
Were you surprised, or did you see that coming?
I think I saw it coming. He has not been making all the moves that I would expect him to make were he to be running statewide. He's still very active politically because he's chairman of the Americans for Prosperity, Virginia.
And a member of the state advisory board of the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership at
right.
UVA,
and
very involved with that group.
And he speaks all over the state. You know, he gets around quite a bit for these meetings. So I did not expect him to run next year and wasn't totally surprised when he said he wasn't.
And the reason this is important, of course, not just because he's a Charlottesville native and a lot of folks here know him personally, is because he's been talked about now for a long time as a real possibility, a real candidate for statewide office.
He is someone with charisma and someone who is a wonderful speaker, and he's someone who I think has the capability of uniting a party that kind of needs uniting at times.
Right, the Republican Party here in Virginia.
Yeah.
Now, is there? What do we know about the possibility that Rob Bell might seek attorney general? Because that, of course, has been talked about for a while.
And it has
last
been.
I checked, he's got quite a war chest if he did want to
run. He is ready to run if he decides to. I don't know that he's made a decision yet. He is mentioned frequently in Richmond as a potential 09 attorney general candidate statewide. Senator Ken Cuccinelli of Fairfax County is another Republican who is looking very seriously at running for attorney general next year. And I don't know how, you know, Rob looks at next year. He's got a young son. I don't know whether that's something he wants to do yet. He's still young.
Now, so next year is the races again for the big three statewide offices in Virginia: attorney general, lieutenant governor, and governor. The governor's races, we've got two on both sides that look like they're
right.
ready to run.
They're running.
Anybody
they're,
else?
They're running.
Is there a fifth?
No. Those four are enough, really.
Those are going to be two tough primaries on both the right and the left.
Well, they're not going to necessarily be primaries. The Democrats, I think, are committed to a primary. They're going to have one between Cree Deeds, the state senator who represents the Charlottesville area from Bath County, and Brian Moran, the House Minority Caucus Leader.
Right, right.
The Democratic Caucus Leader. Alexandria Democrat, younger brother of the congressman from Alexandria, Jim Moran.
Jim Moran.
So the two of them are running flat out for governor, as are the lieutenant governor, John Hager. Bill Bowling,
right.
Current lieutenant governor, and the attorney general, Bob McDonnell. So the Republicans have two who are going out all out for it. The Democrats have two who are going all out for governor. And
so likely we'd see a caucus then in the Republican Party for that nomination.
The Republican Party has decided pretty much to go back to the conventions for a while. They're going to have one May 31st this year to nominate a candidate to run against Mark Warner for the U.S. Senate, the Senate seat being given up by John Warner November 4th on the ballot. Mark Warner has a clear shot to the Democratic Party nomination, but on the Republican side, we have a little bit of a contest between Bob Marshall, the delegate from Manassas, Prince William County, and Jim Gilmore, the former governor. The two of them are running pretty hard for that convention.
Two conservative
nomination.
Republicans.
Two conservative anti-tax Republicans.
Yeah, yeah, very, very interesting. And why the Republican Party in Virginia opting for the convention? And the reason I ask is because I know there's been some efforts to try to amend the laws here in Virginia to require people to declare their party if they wanted to vote in a primary. Republicans
generally favor that. They would like to see registration by party and closed caucuses. I mean, rather closed primaries where only Republicans can vote in a Republican primary. You know, as we've seen all over the nation this year in the Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama race, every state has a different set of rules for, you know, caucus primary.
Right.
Some primaries are open, some are semi-open. You know, you can vote if you're an independent or a Democrat in the Democratic primary. Some are closed. You can only vote if you're registered in that party. And that's what the Republicans want in Virginia. They haven't yet attained that status. So Jim Gilmore marshaled the troops and got the troops to go for a convention this time instead of a primary, which was favored by Tom Davis, the outgoing congressman from Fairfax County. Tom Davis is retiring this year, but he would have run for the Senate seat had it been a primary.
Now, Bob, you've been watching these folks for a long time. What do you think are the chances that we're going to see something like that in Virginia where you would have to declare your party to vote in any kind of primary?
Well, the math for it is a little bit strange. It doesn't entirely add up. For one thing, you've got the Democrats now in control of the Virginia Senate, and the Republicans now in control of the House of Delegates. I think the House of Delegates Republicans would pass that legislation if they thought it could get through the Senate and to the governor and signed, but they see it as somewhat fruitless now to try to get that through because it would not make it all the way. So you have a situation where roughly a third of the state's voters identify as Democrats, roughly a third of the voters identify as Republicans, and then there's this giant third in the middle. You assume they're in the middle, most of them maybe, who consider themselves independent and go from one party back to the other, and they don't have an allegiance to either party. It's difficult if you are controlling one party to lock everybody into a party structure when two-thirds of the people out there don't vote in your party structure.
Right, right. So it would be difficult then perhaps to get a state law passed to do that then.
I don't see it happening very fast.
We're talking with Bob Gibson of the Charlottesville Daily Progress. What is or is not going on in Richmond? Here we are at the end of, supposed to be, the end of another General Assembly session. They were supposed to end, what, Saturday?
Saturday evening. They were supposed to finish. They were supposed to have a budget all wrapped up by Saturday evening. They did not. They still don't today. They're looking at getting together at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, but if they don't have their budget ready, there's no reason for them to get together tomorrow at 4 in the afternoon, so they may not. They may just have a pro forma session tomorrow if the budget negotiators can't reach a deal. And as of an hour or two ago, they had not. So
we literally have just like, it's just a few people in a room somewhere trying to figure things out.
Yeah, there are six House negotiators and six Senate negotiators. And they really have to get back to their leadership and talk to their leadership because there's new leadership in the Senate. So it reminds me of the old movie line, you know, what we have here is a failure to communicate. because the new leadership in the Senate has not learned to communicate with, and the people they need to communicate with have not learned to communicate with the new leadership in the Senate. Back and forth. For many years, we had John Chichester, the senator from Stafford, as the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. And we had Delegate Vince Callahan, the Republican, same party from McLean, as chairman of the House Appropriations Committee. And the two of them didn't like each other, and they had plenty of differences. In fact, we had a Virginia Capital Correspondents Association dinner one year where we had the two of them together speak, and all they did was insult each other. It was really quite funny, and they meant it. But they knew how to wrap up the budget. I mean, they
knew how to get the work done.
They knew how to get the work done. Yeah. They knew how to compromise. And I'm not sure these new people on the committee of conference are quite as good at communicating with their leadership and their troops and at compromise as their predecessors grew to be over the long time they were in that job. You know, it's always a bad sign when the negotiators are calling press conferences to negotiate through the press instead of meeting with each other. And they've been doing that over the last week or so. You know, they'll call us together and say, well, we think the other side's negotiating in bad faith because of A, B, and C. And then the other side will call a press conference and say, well, we think the other side is negotiating with bad faith because of A, B, and C.
That's, what a shame.
That's not a good way to compromise.
Yeah, yeah.
It sort of stands in the way of compromise, and that's what they've been doing. Now, since Sunday, they got together 4 hours or more on Sunday. Then they broke off into, you know, little groups, as they should, you know, carrying different parts of the budget, trying to compromise the figures. They really aren't all that terribly far apart.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. What is the big holdup, and aren't they already pretty much on the same page about most things?
There are a number of money differences between the two. For example, the Senate wants to take $400 million out of the rainy day fund. The House wants to take $200 million out of the rainy day fund. They haven't even come to the table yet on negotiating that difference. That may be the last thing they do.
150 and let's call it a day.
Well, you know, they could do that, but that would be too easy. There are a number of other hang-ups. The House wants more waivers for mental health, waivers for treating people with mental health disabilities in the community. They want 800 waivers. The Senate has come up to 500 waivers to pay for 500. So they're really not that far apart. They do not have any giant philosophical walls to climb. They just have to compromise on a number of parts of the budget they have not yet compromised on.
And we're talking with Bob Gibson of the Charlottesville Daily Progress. Governor Kane, of course, ran on this idea of putting a lot more money into this pre-K initiative. When the economy turned, a lot of that money disappeared and he could do less. Where does that stand now? And
well,
is
the
Republicans
the Senate,
sort of playing politics, you think? With
well, both sides are playing politics.
Yeah.
The Republicans want $20, $25 million new dollars into pre-K early childhood education programs for at-risk youth. The Democrats want up to $40 million. So, the differences are not that great. I think it's something that they can compromise, but the House doesn't want to give too much to the governor. The Senate wants to keep the governor's initiative. There are other sticking points between the House and the Senate. The Senate wants to keep drug courts. They're spending $5.9 million over the next 2 years to maintain 14 drug courts around Virginia. These have proven to be very successful when it comes to keeping people out of prison. And you have Republicans and Democrats arguing that, you know, they can save money for the state because instead of paying $22,000 a year to incarcerate somebody, you have them in a $6,000 a year program, and he's actually getting help for a drug problem. These graduates tend to have very low recidivism rates. Once they clear these programs, once they get out, they tend to stay out and stay out of trouble.
And the House Republicans
Republicans have taken that money out of the $5.9 million out of the drug courts, and they put it into the mental health waivers or somewhere else. They would rather see it spent elsewhere. So that's just one of the sticking points that they have not solved yet.
So if they don't get to an agreement here by tomorrow or today or whenever the self-imposed deadline is, can they just indefinitely extend this, or are they going to come back?
Oh, boy, can they. They've done it before. Five of the last 7 years, I think they have.
This has become the normal thing. Do we need to lower the bar here and sort of say, well, this is just normal in Virginia?
No. We have a constitution that says, you know, you will meet between such and such a day, the second Wednesday of January, and in the even-numbered years like this year, we're supposed to meet for 60 days, and we're supposed to have a budget accomplished within 60 days and then come back. They're going to come back on April 16th and have a veto override session. The governor will have acted on all of their legislation by then, and there will be a session on April 16th. Now, that date last year was when they banged out the final details of this transportation compromise that since last year has
fallen apart
in many ways fallen apart. So they have to come back this year and probably deal with transportation, which they aren't close to finding a solution on. But first they have to do the budget.
And that was my next question, was transportation, because it looks like are we going to have another special session for that, you think, this year?
Almost certainly we'll have another special session. It could be a 1 or 2 day thing right around the April 16th veto override session. They don't necessarily have to come back at a later time during the year. And I would argue the longer they put it off, the longer they put off finding a way to mend those holes in their transportation compromise of last year, which was thrown out 7-0 by the state Supreme Court, the harder it is going to be for them to do it, because they will be coming upon next year, which is an election year. So the earlier they can reach some sort of funding compromise for transportation, the better off they are, the better off the state is.
Because at the end of the day, ultimately, we have the challenge is the fact that the state government is unable to fulfill one of its core responsibilities, which is transportation, because they don't have enough money to do it.
More and more of the transportation budget is going into maintenance, with less and less available for construction. Now, if gas gets up to over $6 a gallon, we may not need all these new roads, but that's not the way they're looking at it right now. The money is falling into the maintenance budget because that comes first. And then what's left over goes into construction. Within 6 or 7 years, there isn't going to be any construction money at the current rate they're taxing.
Wow. And what's it, real quick, what's the situation with the judges? They're not on that together on that either.
There are as many as 3 dozen judges that are hung up now between the House and the Senate, and if they do not reach a compromise by tomorrow or whenever the assembly decides to wrap up, then a lot of those appointments will go to the governor. Temporary. The governor gets to appoint them for 1 year.
I was going
to
say, the courts don't stop. They got to just make temporary appointments to these benches.
The governor will try to find someone who can give up his law practice or her law practice and be a judge for a year. And then you can't really go back to practicing law after you've been a judge for a year. It's very hard to get people into this if they think it's a temporary thing. So the governor has to work with both sides and basically find the people who will be kept in that job as he appoints them, if he has to, as a temporary person.
Bob Gibson writes for the Charlottesville Daily Progress. Read his work in the paper and online at dailyprogress.com. You can also check out Bob's blog, Politics in Virginia. Just look for his picture there in the square on the homepage at dailyprogress.com. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.